Right, I've moved forward our monthly chat with Marlon Chevalier because I am mindful of the fact that month end is looming with all kinds of implications for property lease agreements. Marlon, as you know, is a specialist rental property attorney, director of Marlon Chevalier and Associates Incorporated. And you are welcome to call in the next 15 minutes if you are facing a dilemma or have a question around your rental agreement and the end of your lease, etc. Just a reminder, the advice Marlon shares on air is intended as general legal guidance only. Everybody's individual case and situation is unique. You should always consult your own professional to discuss your particular challenges in the kind of detail we can't go into on air. So just with that disclaimer in mind, we welcome back Marlon Chevalier. Always good to have you on the show. Thanks for being prepared to shift it a week earlier as well.
Absolutely, Papa. I've got plenty of time at home.
Okay. It's a very worrying time for many tenants, Marlon. Uncertainty about their own finances, uncertainty about whether lockdown is only going to be 3 weeks or might be extended. I'm guessing your phones have probably been ringing off the hook the last week or two.
Yeah, I mean, we're always busy, thankfully, but it's been unprecedented. Just as unprecedented as the lockdown is, the queries that have come in from rental agents, landlords and tenants has been unbelievable. And hopefully we've been dealing with it the best way we can.
Okay, now there are a couple of key sort of phrases we need to deal with and sort of set the framework before we delve into specific questions. Marlon, obviously the declaration of the state of national disaster and the regulations that go with it has a direct impact on, for example, people who had a lease that was due to expire tomorrow, people who were intending to move into a new property on the first of the month on Wednesday, let alone those who can't trade because they're not deemed an essential service. Lots for us to talk about here. I think it's important we start with what the law refers to as the force majeure. Can you explain for us why that's relevant to this particular conversation?
Well, of course. I mean, force majeure, or vis maior, as they would call it in the Latin phrase, basically talks of a superior power or force which can't be resisted or can't be controlled. And it's clear from our case law that one of those aspects of vis majeure actually was a Supreme Court of Appeal case in 1999, which spoke about an inability to comply because of law which has been passed. And, of course, the National Disaster Regulations is clearly legislation now which has a direct impact on people's ability, people's freedom of movement, and, of course, as a result, the lockdown is what we call vis majeure, or force majeure, as you would call it. So that's the legal framework. We've got force majeure, vis maior, and then we've got sort of a subsection of that called casus fortuitus, which means an exceptional or an extraordinary occurrence which actually can't be reasonably foreseen. And I think it's clear that this was something that maybe should have been, but it certainly wasn't foreseen. So that sets the groundwork for a lockdown to be imposed and for regulations to apply, which means you can't leave your residential home. Okay. Simple as that.
Okay. Now, what does that mean for the landlord, Marlon? If there is a tenant sitting in the home that was meant to be vacating this past weekend to make way for a new incoming tenant or for you to move back into the property, they weren't able to do so because there are no delivery services able to operate and they're not allowed to move around outside their home. Where does that leave the landlord in terms of their rights as the owner of the property?
What creates an incredibly weird situation, the first situation it creates is that a tenant is not allowed to leave. They're not allowed to leave voluntarily, and they can't leave by way of a court order, assuming there's an eviction order in place for them to leave at the end of the month. Eviction orders are suspended. So if they want to leave, they can't. If they don't want to leave, they don't have to. And that puts the landlord in a position that, well, wait a second, I've got someone in my property who now, for some strange reason, can't pay me rent. Or maybe that's because he can't earn an income, because he's not allowed to leave the residential home, the matrimonial home, to go to his office to earn money. So the landlord's in a position now where he has to turn around and say, well, what do I do? And the unfortunate aspect of residential rentals, believe it or not, is that just because a tenant can't move, or is not allowed to move by law because of the National Disaster Regulations, it doesn't mean that they aren't obliged to pay rental. That's a big problem that tenants are having, and it sort of plays into the hands of rental lawyers such as myself and agents and landlords, because the way that force majeure works, and it's actually again cited in our case law, is that the inability of a tenant to pay rental whilst they are definitively locked down in their property has to be a direct effect of this force majeure. And the fact is that if somebody is occupying a property, a residential property, they've got what we call beneficial use of the property. And it's ironic. They are forced to enjoy the property that they're in because they can't leave, and that means they must pay their rental. So landlords are, with absolute respect to tenants, entitled to demand that rental. And failing payment of that rental, they are entitled to bring an eviction application. The only indulgence that a tenant has, and it's not an indulgence to not pay rental, the only indulgence they do have is, ironically, that they can't be sued because we can't issue legal process at the moment, and they can't be evicted because we can't do evictions. So their indulgence is not that they can't or mustn't pay rental. They are obliged to pay rental. They just can't be thrown out or sued for money owing.
It's really, what a conundrum. Marlon, I mean, it's perhaps easier to think in commercial terms. A shop that is paying rental to a landlord in a big mall, for example, who's not able to trade because they have been closed due to COVID-19, has got perhaps a legal leg to stand on to argue that the rent should be suspended or reduced in those circumstances, because that's a direct result of the force majeure. The person sitting in a house of which they still have the use, as they say, they're still occupying it, they have the roof over their heads, doesn't have such a direct correlation.
No, I mean, the fact that a person who runs a business is unable to earn income is completely incidental. The fact is that if they have office rental, such as myself, and they can't have full enjoyment of the property because they can't go to their business and trade, they are entitled to a remission of rental or a rebate, depending on how long they're unable to do so. So, ironically, commercial tenants have a stronger ground to ask for a remission of rental. I think the big problem that's also come about, just turning back slightly to residential, is there's a perception that, well, maybe we can waive the terms of the lease to allow a deposit to be used in lieu of rental. And I want to make it categorically clear that until there's a regulation which says otherwise, the Rental Housing Act clearly says that you can't use the tenant's deposit to set off rental, and yes, to do so is unlawful. And even if you think of it logically, Pippa, if someone had to use the deposit which denies the landlord the security come the end of the lease of having money available in case there are damages to the property, what happens if the lockdown is extended? What happens for the second month of non-paid rental? You've used the deposit. What do you use then? And then there's also a question of rental deferment. Some very compassionate landlords out there are saying to tenants, residential tenants, look, if you owe rental of 10,000 Rand, we'll give you a 5,000 Rand rebate, we'll defer it. The following month, they will end up owing 15,000 Rand, and they might not have the ability to settle that. So you are potentially, you know, protracting an unfortunate situation. Again, it comes down to what is lawful and not lawful, and I'm of the view you need to be very careful if you try to break the law to accommodate a tenant, because ultimately the landlord is going to face the wrath and potentially a rental agent on behalf of that landlord. Yeah. So residential rentals is a very difficult part at the moment, whereas commercial is less problematic, I would say.
Okay. I know your focus is on residential, but Marlon, this is an interesting question on the commercial side. As you say, they're in a slightly more clear-cut position because they can show a direct correlation between the events of COVID-19 and their loss of ability to use the property. So they have a right to go to the landlord and say, please, can we have a conversation about possible reduction? Does the landlord have the right to refuse? I mean, we are hearing that some of the big shopping malls in particular are not budging. They're just telling their tenants, sorry, you owe X amount in rent and you should pay as usual.
Well, the irony is you're welcome to speak to your landlord, and the landlord is welcome to agree to an addendum to the lease to allow certain things. But in most commercial leases, you will find force majeure clauses, which says, you know, some clauses say only in the event of an act of war or a riot, just like insurance policies or an act of God or legislative direction, that is force majeure, therefore we give you a rental rebate. Some might say notwithstanding acts of God, you're still liable. So it's very much dependent on the lease agreement. Also, if hypothetically you've got a situation where a tenant says, I can't pay my rental, the landlord can say, you know what, I'm not going to let you off the hook. You will pay because ultimately you still have the benefit of having your assets at the premises. So the bottom line is you can still work online. Who knows what the landlord might say? It does unfortunately turn on what the lease says. If the landlord turns around and says to the tenant, you are not allowed to get into any rental rebate, and the lease says otherwise, then there is potentially a challenge. But as I say, it all depends on the lease agreement, unfortunately. The one thing that people, there's a particular author or two that have made a very fatal error, and they've said, well, if your lease agreement says you must pay the rental without deduction, without set-off. And that's a traditional clause in pretty much all commercial and residential leases. That is not saying, well, force majeure applies. In essence, what that means is our courts, and actually they've decided on appeal, they've said, if it's got a without deduction clause, that doesn't mean you are obliged to pay a rental, because that's dealing with an ordinary course of events. Mm-hmm. Force majeure is completely different. It's completely unforeseen. So as I say, many leases have different versions of force majeure clauses, vis maior clauses. Certain leases have deduction and set-off clauses, which doesn't allow you to reduce the rental no matter what. Yeah. But again, there is case law on this, and it changes from case to case. The general view is that it all depends on your commercial lease, because in essence, commercial leases are not regulated by law. Residential leases are.
Okay. I'm thinking, I mean, Marlon, it occurs to me some people might be in the truly awful position that they were about to move into a new place of residence where they owe rental on a property they can't yet move into, are now stuck in their previous place of residence and therefore owe rental to the landlord because they continue to use it. Are some people going to be left in a position where legally they're obliged to pay two sets of rent?
No, of course not. The fact is that a tenant who can't move into new premises because of a national disaster regulation, that is force majeure applying. So in that particular instance, the tenant will say, there's an impossibility of performance on my part. Therefore, you as a landlord cannot hold me liable. Because the whole thing about force majeure is it releases somebody from partial performance or entire performance based on a contract. So whereas the tenant who is in the premises that they're currently in, even though they may not want to be there, would be liable to pay for their beneficial occupation of that particular premises. But the fact that they can't move into new premises wouldn't oblige them to pay additional rental because of force majeure, they're not allowed to leave the premises. So in that instance, the law is working in their favor and against the landlord of the new premises, who can't hold anybody liable for the loss of rental at that particular point.
Okay, but they are still liable for rental on the property they continue to occupy until such time as they can leave. I mean, Marlon, closing words of advice to those who find themselves caught in this really unfortunate situation, perhaps that they are facing the prospect of joblessness or reduced income or forced unpaid leave and aren't going to be able to meet their usual rental obligations. Likewise, the landlord who has a tenant in that position. It's a time that calls for a lot of clear communication and a big degree of compassion, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Look, compassion is first and foremost. If there's any way a landlord can hypothetically agree to some sort of rental deferment which doesn't cause the lease to change, who clearly does not use the deposit because that's unlawful, that would be first prize. However, we need to be mindful, Pippa, that many landlords rely on rental income for their gearing in order to pay their bond and their taxes and their utilities. So you've got people who have bonds, and until there is law that says you are bond-free for 3 months, only then potentially could a landlord rely on that to offer some compassion. But there are many landlords who do not have any bonds over their properties. Are they going to be prejudiced now because they're obliged to give rental consideration, even though they've got an unbonded property? So, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. The best is communication with your landlord. And I think this is a crystal clear point, which I don't think has been emphasized enough. If a landlord takes a hardline approach, Pippa, and says, you've got to pay me, I don't care that you've been retrenched, I don't care there's been a pro rata reduction of your salary, the fact is that if the landlord takes a hardline approach and that tenant is left in a terrible position, that landlord can't mitigate his loss in any event. It's not like you can get that tenant out at this point, get a new tenant in to pay a higher rental or any rental. So he can't actually negate his potential loss by taking a hardline approach. On the other hand, he's got to weigh up his own personal circumstances and seek help from the bank to allow him to buffer his bond or whatever the case might be, which in turn accommodates the tenant.
You've given us lots of food for thought. Thank you so much, Marlon Chevalu, Director of Marlon Chevalu and Associates Incorporated. He is a specialist rental property attorney. And Marlon, before I let you go, I know you've been writing extensively about this. You've got a couple of opinion pieces that you've penned already. Where do our listeners go if they'd like to read those at leisure with time to digest them?
Actually, if you could just pass in my email address, I'm more than happy to send them a copy of the articles and opinions so they can, you know, they've got time at home. And emailing me is the best because I am online pretty much 24/7, 365, and I'll be more than happy to forward it to them.
And that email address is?
It's my full name, so it's Marlon at marlonchevalu, marlin@marlinchevalu.co.za.
marlin@marlinchevalu.co.za, and the surname is spelled S-H-E-V-E-L-E-W. Marlin, thanks so much. We'll chat again soon.
Take care, Pippa.
You too. Keep well. Bye. Marlin Chevalu, thanks for the advice. So if you would like to read his columns, etc., and the documents he's put together with more detail, just drop him an email to marlin@marlinchevalu.co.za and he'll gladly pass it along to you.